Welcome to the Men of Eight Gang Podcast, episode 238. I'm Steve Borsch, and I'm on with Tim Elliott.
Good morning.
Graham Thickens. And Bill Wilson. Here. We think Graham's on.
Hey, I'm here.
There he is.
I'm here. Yes.
Okay. All right.
Yeah, Graham's with those 20 guys outside the Apple store.
Yeah.
I didn't know it opened at 8 this morning, just for the iPad Air, huh?
Just for the event or the launch.
Yeah, he's got some pictures up on Google Plus.
Oh, he does?
Yep. Yeah. I put the link down in the notes, way down in the iPad section.
Okay. All right. Cool. Yeah. Looks like it's doing well around the world.
Oh, I'll bet. Yeah. I was going to head over there later.
I priced out my dream MacBook Pro, and it'll be a while.
Yeah. Well,
it comes up to about, you know, it starts at $1,999, but it's about $3,100 when all said and done.
So. Oh man.
Well, hey, sell your old ones and upgrade to new ones. You know, that's what we do, right, Steve?
Absolutely. But you know what though? I have to tell you guys, and I should put a link to this post on my own blog, but that I bought a Mac 2CI, a color Mac, back in, I don't know, 89 or something, from an Apple employee who got, 60%, could buy it at 60% of retail. And my cost on the box was $41.69.
Oof.
And so, yeah. You know, you figure, time value of money. I mean, that's, you know, the present value of that money is probably, you know, $7,000 or something, right? Yeah. And so, costs have, I mean, even though they're high, they've really, really come down for what we get.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, it's incredible.
More
I had one of those on my
You just
on
go
my
ahead
desk.
Keep rationalizing. Yeah, you just go ahead and rationalize.
Thanks, Phil.
Just go.
Doesn't work with my wife.
At Kodak, and everyone did. So imagine how much they paid for all those, hundreds of them.
Oh, my God, yeah.
That's why they went belly up, maybe, huh?
Yeah, it was all because they bought Macs.
Oh jeez,
that's what it was.
It was a great machine, though. I mean, it really. I love that machine. But
that was good.
Yeah,
I had it until fairly recently. I think I got rid of it about 6 years ago.
Wow.
How do you get rid of your old relics, though? I mean, I still have the old original iMac sitting in my storage room, and my old SC30 and the Macintosh bag, and you know, I can't bear to part with these things. I'm running a museum over here.
Well,
so you can eBay.
You should
them.
Keep it. Yeah.
Yeah, I could, but yeah.
I still have a 2C in storage.
Make it into a nice planter.
really. Well.
Yeah, I went to the Computer History Museum, you know, in Mountain View once a few years ago, and I was looking at their lineup of old Macs and old compact luggables and stuff. And I thought, well, heck, I've got a better selection of these than they do. You know, I thought maybe I should sell them to them, but you can't sell them. You got to donate them to them. And
well, you get your name in the museum. There you go.
Yeah, they'll put up. But
here's the Graham Thickens section.
SE30. Yeah.
And everyone will say, who the hell is Graham?
Yeah.
British guy.
Then we could right. Yeah, we could put up a nice
some
little
British guy on Twitter.
You could put some Canadian.
You could put up a nice little plaque that describes Graham and who he is, and we could make him out to be somebody really, really, really spectacular. And people will go, "Wow, I didn't know that."
Maybe next time I go out to the valley, I'll take my SE30 and the Macintosh bag and take it as carry-on luggage. See if they'll let me on with that.
Oh, that'd be funny.
I'm sorry, sir. You need to take the Sopwith Camel that's leaving later today.
I want to try to get on your Wi-Fi with this. which we can do now.
Hey, guys, did you see the big TEDx Lakeville was in town?
Yeah, do you guys have technology down there?
Yes, we do. It's quite exciting. Apparently. And it's not just, TED's.
So how was it? I was
just
gonna go
technology.
And I ended up not. So how was it, Phil?
Oh, I know. It was probably too expensive for you.
Oh, really? They charge for it?
It was free.
All right. It's going to say they're at the local high school.
Yeah, it was great. I thought it was really, you know, you sort of have to keep reminding yourself. I had to keep reminding myself through the whole thing. It's like, wow, this was put on by a 17-year-old senior. So very, very sharp guy, Dylan.
So who spoke?
Well, you know, it was across, the topic was the next 100 years. And it was to talk about, you know, changes in education, politics, and technology. It was a little light on technology. A representative from iMation spoke.
Good choice of company. No, kidding.
You mean the one that's about ready to go out of business?
That one. Yeah, that one, yeah. Phil.
You know, we had, let's see, what is... I'm sorry. I've got to bring this up in my show notes so I can actually speak logically about it. But
wow, it's one of those.
I wonder if somebody actually did a post on it. Oh, yes, I did.
You did, and it was a good one. Yeah.
Thank you so much. Let's see. As we take a look at the speakers for the night, we had representatives from Azul 7, which is a digital agency. A guy by the name of Anthony Fleck, who's very impressive, a junior at the U in microbiology, talking about discovery education. A woman by the name of Betsy Graw, who did a great presentation on throwing away the script. Basically, this life script you're given. You know, when you're young, this is how life is supposed to go, and going off script. That was very exciting. I really like that. Our mayor, our 28-year-old mayor, Matt Little, did a great presentation on beyond bipartisanship. Who else? Oh, you know, Dr. Lisa Snyder, who we've had on the show before, talked about education and making it more personal through technology. Who else? Well, Ian Williams was the gentleman from iMation that did his presentation. So all in all, it was a great evening. You know, some of the speakers were, the guy that put this together, a 17-year-old senior by the name of Dylan Edelman, did a great job putting this together. But he was let down by a few of the speakers. They were not well prepared. They were long-winded.
Too bad.
And it was just, you know... It was too bad because they were doing presentations that were like presentations to a client or a board or they were overly simplified and they weren't focused. And so other than that, though, it went off without a hitch. This Dylan Edelman kid was just brilliant in between the sessions. We did a great job of bridging each presentation and spoke very eloquently and very smart kid. And also kudos to them, because when I first got there, they had a tweet wall going on the left side of the stage. So you know how I feel about tweet walls.
Yeah, yeah, right.
In the post.
I have, of course, you know, tweeted, gee, I hope they turn off the tweet wall during the presentation out of respect for the speakers. And they shut off the tweet wall. So,
Wow.
Oh, man. I don't know. I don't know if it was because of me or because they realized that somebody was going to start going back and forth about a trip to Taco Bell. So, which is what happens with all tweet walls, you know. So,
somebody has to get snarky.
They're just a waste of time during presentations. They're fine in the lobby, but no, just keep them out of the presentation hall. So, yeah. Anyway, so it was good. And I hope they do another one. This was really well put together.
So can I ask you a question about this? You know, there's been some discussion about the TEDx bringing down the TED brand. And it's because there have been events where they just have been, you know, they just haven't come across well. They've been not really failures, but they haven't been profound and all that. And you just sort of described how Dylan was a little bummed out about the speakers.
I don't want to say he was bummed out. I was bummed out. I wasn't bummed out at all. I think he was just fine with it. But
yeah, okay.
I felt as an audience member, it's like they kind of did him a disservice by not putting together a better presentation.
Yeah.
I wonder what the requirements to do a TED event is.
It's really actually quite complex. There are a lot of requirements that you have. Well, you can't make any money. You have to have, there are specifics for things that you have to have on stage. You know, he spoke with us at the Tech Advisory Council for the school district of which I am a part of. And he talked about needing to, you have to have a red circular rug on the stage. You have to have the 3D TEDx sign mm-hmm. on the stage. You have to show two TED videos somewhere during the course of the event. So there's a lot of things that you have to do and that you aren't able to, you know, you're not able to monetize it. You have to provide video, you know, that sort of a thing.
Yeah.
That's interesting that you can't make money. So only the TED brand can make money then? Or
I guess so.
Well, no. You know, let's hear it for capitalism, although it may be a nonprofit, but it supports
it. You know, I did hear, you know, I had seen some of that, some of the talk about, you know, TED Talks being somewhat elitist, that sort of a thing. But, you know, they are what you make them. Do I want to spend some of those TED Talks? The actual TED Talks are, the tickets are very expensive. And I think
they're thousands.
And you have to be invited. I believe so.
Yeah.
It's
well, I know we all get invited every year, but we're too busy.
I got so I'm tired of the emails. But
I went to, I think the first Twin Cities one over in St. Paul. Was it at the History Museum or one of the museums in St. Paul? And it blew me away how quality of an event it was. I mean, and the quality of the speakers. Wow. Did you guys get to that one?
That was it. They charged for that one, didn't they?
I don't think so. Or maybe I got a press pass. I don't know. But it filled that whole auditorium of, I don't know, 400 people or more. That had to have been like 4 or 5 years ago, it seems like. But the quality of the speakers was tremendous. It was obviously a TEDx event. It wasn't like a regular TED event, I don't think. I'm sure it was TEDx. Yeah. Anyway, they do a good job.
Yeah. So, well, an evening well spent. So.
Yeah. Well, you had mentioned that the Imation guy got up and talked. Did he mention anything about the fact that Imation is getting rid of businesses and their losses are continuing to mount?
No, not at all. His conversation was more about, you know, tech and how it's going to be more and more integrated in your lives.
Yeah.
Not anything that, you know, is unusual or, you know, new news to the likes of us who, you know, work in this industry every day. But, you know, it was a nice little, you know, here's what's coming, everything from driverless cars to wearable tech, that sort of thing.
Oh, okay. All right. Well.
But that's, it was, again, I think that was really the only real tech influenced sort of, or tech specific type of thing.
Yeah.
But yeah, speaking of Imation, big trouble there, I guess. Or,
well, there really is, but yeah, big trouble. But you know, they've had trouble from day one. And I remember, and Tim, you probably know this too, when they sold the medical imaging division to Kodak. And Kodak was housed in their building there in St. Paul.
Oakdale.
And, you know, that was their cash cow at the time. And they needed, I think they sold it for like $80 million. They needed the cash to keep the doors open. And so that's tough.
So now they got rid of the Memorex consumer brand business,
which was going nowhere.
Yeah,
and Extreme. Come on, too. I still use a lot of tape.
Yeah, well, actually, they made a lot of money on CDs for quite a while because Memorex was actually kind of it was a good brand name, and it was an affordable. You could buy a tower of 50 blank CDs for, you know, some ridiculous price like $8 when everybody else was like $13, $14. And so for quite a while there, they were actually making some pretty good dough on that brand.
When was the last time you bought a sleeve of either CDs or DVDs?
It's been like four
or 5 years for me. And I'll burn one occasionally, you know, here and there.
Well, but we do only because we ship some stuff on, we ship some digital stuff on CD. Some people want it on CD. They don't want to download it. Don't ask me why.
That used to be my Black Friday, like one of the things you'd have to get was a sleeve of CDs. A sleeve of CDs, like 100 or 50 or whatever, because they're always like $4.99 or something, you know?
Yeah, your wife must really love taking you shopping on Black Friday.
Well, you know.
Tim, where's Everyone Tim? Oh, he's CDs. Over there by the blank CDs. I'm going to go look at clothes. And
hey, got to save some money. Come on.
Yeah. Yeah. He's
over there by the blanks.
And, you know, Office Max and Office Depot always had them. Those are big customers of Imation over the years. Now they're merging.
Yeah.
You know, it's a lot of changes that the digital revolution is putting into place in the economy.
Yeah. And look at our pals at Digital River. You know, they're selling businesses and cutting costs. I got a neighbor that works for Digital River, and I always try to get information out of him because he's a VP of Asia-Pac and Latin America.
Yeah,
John Ebert, he won't tell me squat. But anyway, but, you know, one of the things that's really, really crystal clear, if I watched their webinar for their earnings a while back here, a few weeks ago, and it's clear to me that they're pivoting the business, that they're really moving the business away from, you know, digital download support, exclusively toward an e-commerce and transaction-based suite of offerings, you know, with marketing services wrapped around it and all that stuff. So this didn't surprise me that they would shed some businesses and cut some jobs in those areas, because they have to pivot or they're screwed.
Oh yeah, yeah. And the new guy they brought in, it's only been about 8 months, isn't it?
Yeah, it was the beginning of this year or sometime. Yeah.
And where did he come from? I'm trying to remember. One of the big players.
I think he was CA, Computer Associates.
Right. Yeah, he had background with a few tech vendors, and now he's brought in this ex Microsoft guy,
right,
as COO.
Right.
Right. So that was just announced a couple days ago.
Yeah. Well, I mean, clearly, I mean, he's got global experience and all that. I'm sure he'll take it up to the next level. But still, I mean, it's got to be tough for these guys to try to move that business. It's just that in a lot of ways, they're kind of the Akamai of digital transactions. I mean, they've got servers all over the world and they've got customers all over the world and they're doing, network-based transactional stuff all over the world. And, you know, it's companies like that have all that plumbing, I think, that can really leverage it if they can get the vision and then execute on that.
Interestingly, this guy they hired as COO, Ted Cahill, I believe it's pronounced, was corporate VP at Microsoft of MSN. And prior to that, he worked at AOL, United Online. Remember that great name?
Yeah, And
Bank of America, among other places. So.
So this guy's got a macro view of big web application, big website transactional stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Sounds like he can't keep a job though.
That's right. That's right.
You know, it's rare when you see somebody that's been at a company more than 5 years anymore. I mean, it's crazy. Yeah,
true.
Yeah. Well, you know, we've been doing Minovate podcasts longer than a lot of jobs I've had.
That's right.
Yeah, no kidding.
I sure wish this paid.
Yeah, exactly. It'll pay off because, you know, someday the historians will look back and say, hey, Phil Wilson, who was this guy? What was he talking about?
And there'll be a whole Wikipedia page, and then there'll be a link to a Minovate Wikipedia page.
There you go.
Ooh,
there you
and
go.
There'll be a link from there to God knows what, you know?
Yep.
Do we have a Minovate Wikipedia page? I don't know if we did.
No, I don't think so.
We could probably create one.
That. We can't do that. Someone else can do it, though.
Yeah, where's our staff?
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. Our social media interns.
Someone in the audience has to do it, you know?
Oh, okay.
That's right. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, but then
let's put that.
Yeah, but see, then they'll put stuff in there about Phil's pedophilia, you know, that he wanted to be a priest. And I'm just kidding. I'm kidding.
Pedophilia. Why pedophilia?
Yeah.
Why not sodomy pajamas or something like that.
Okay, so all right, all right. If I'm gonna tease you, I'll make it more relevant.
Or a little less freaky.
All right. All right. Well, hey, we're coming up on shopping. Anything going on, Tim, Mr. Retail Analyst, that you're really keeping your eyes on what's going on with all the stuff around showrooming, and anything going on that you're seeing?
Lots going on. It's going to be a bad holiday season because there's one less week. And of course the economic situation doesn't help either. Cause, Thanksgiving is a week later than it normally is. And, I'm not sure why that is, but this must be the way that the calendar falls. And it's, last Thursday in November is, you know, not around the 25th. It's like the 28th or 29th, whatever that is. So anyway, there's one less shopping week and, economic conditions are bad. So people are really trying to, pump up interest and get people into stores. And Best Buy has a new TV ad campaign that they're rolling out, which they basically embrace showrooming. They have big stars doing the ads, and I've seen a couple in football games. They're trying to pull people in, and it's interesting, their approach, which is, really out front talking about showrooming, which of course is where you go in and check out a product in a Best Buy or Target or Walmart or wherever before you buy it on Amazon.
So. Yeah. Well, you know what I thought was interesting is my wife, who's a buyer at Target, and she ran Room and Board stores. She was a GM for them years ago, and was really disturbed that my daughter might have to work on Thanksgiving into the evening when she was a lead at the Best Buy mobile store. And my daughter was rolling her eyes and all that. Well, here comes an article, just a few days ago about Kohl's joining Macy's and JCPenney and others opening on Thanksgiving evening. And I exclaimed to my wife, what the hell? I mean, they're just, ruining Thanksgiving. And she said, well, Steve, they have to compete with online. And I mean, to hear her say that and have that position, but she said, online's open 24/7. So how are they going to compete? And I thought, oh my God, she's right.
Well, yeah, my daughter works at Target, and she will be working Thanksgiving. So,
yeah.
When do they open on Thanksgiving?
I don't know.
It's 8 o'clock at night for some of the stores, like at the Mall of America, but
I think that's about when they're going to do it too, because it's like the Black Friday shift, which used to be at 3 or 4 in the morning, and now it's of course they're opening like at midnight. So I think it's just an early Black Friday opening is basically what it's going to turn out to be.
Yep.
Wow.
So we're eating dinner early, which is what we normally do anyways.
Right.
So it's not going to really change Thanksgiving.
Well,
we're a late eater Thanksgiving, so we won't be doing it, but I predict that next year they'll be opening, it'll go all day Thanksgiving. Just like Kmart started. Kmart started a trend. Isn't that amazing?
Well, the Walmart that's right around the corner from where I live here in Lakeville, they've always been open on Thanksgiving.
Oh, have they? Oh, okay.
The store's only been open for, three years.
Yeah. But, yeah, I think Kmart was the first to do it, and Walmart probably copied them,
Yeah.
So, yeah.
Well,
but I'll be in line with getting my sleeve of CDs.
No, you'll be rushing in, pushing down old ladies to get to your sleeve of CDs is what'll happen.
Hey, right.
Yeah.
Hey, I saw Walmart had a terabyte drive for $62, a Toshiba external terabyte drive. That's
USB? Really?
Yeah.
Sweet.
I might swing over and grab one of those,
I got one for $50 at Newegg. It was like a special deal, but it was good. It works great.
Wow. Yep.
Crazy.
Well, I'll tell you what, my son wants to get into the gaming business, and he's taking classes around that for digital production, and he wants to go down to DePaul because they've got a great program, and we looked at that gaming college in Seattle, which is one of the top four, I think. And the gaming business is just absolutely exploding worldwide. I'm sure you guys saw that when the recent, of course, see, I don't even know all these games, but there was, you know, the big deal Xbox game that just came out. They did some obscene amount in 24 hours, you know, like a $500 million in 24 hours. Well, so here's our pals at NativeX up in St. Cloud that do this new mobile ad platform. And how are they positioning this? I mean, do you guys even know? How are they positioning this with, you know, iOS games and you know, in-app purchases and so on? Do you guys know?
I don't know. Well, when I read this story, I thought, this is kind of weird. Does Apple even allow this kind of stuff?
Well, that's what I was wondering.
They went whole hog to Android. I mean, they kind of left iOS behind. They had to after the initial shutdown, you know, of being able to do that in-app thing. So, you know, I don't know a tremendous amount about it, but my understanding is that they're focusing in the Android world for sure.
Well, there's sure enough units sold in Android to make one heck of a business.
Yeah, they're putting everything behind this native advertising explosion, you know, and decided to jump in early and with both feet. So they work with a lot of the major players and, you know, the Yahoos and so forth. They're very well ensconced out there in the Bay Area and in the game community. And I believe, is GDC going on in LA here pretty quick, or could it even be this coming week? I know
the Game Developers Conference.
Yeah, I believe it's in LA this time. They do it twice a year. I was at the one in whatever it was, March, in San Francisco, which is huge. I mean, it's like 25,000 people, and of course NativeX was there in a big way.
The GDC in San Francisco is the 17th through the 21st of March next year.
Yeah, but they have one in the fall. I know, because the Canopy guys, the touch sensitive iPhone case guys, mentioned it to me, and I believe that one is you know, it's a lesser event. It wouldn't be as big as the one in March, but I think they said it's
November 5th through 7th in LA.
There okay. you go. Okay. Yep. So, yeah. So, next week.
Next week.
Well, I'm in Denver at Defrag. So, no, yeah.
And everybody's traveling.
W3i will be all over that event, I'm sure, doing deals like mad.
Well, you guys know Android better than Graham and I, Phil and Tim. And is social gaming as big on Android as it is on iOS?
Oh yeah. You know, it's just big as anything on iOS, but you know, I'm not intimately involved with that space. You know, we work with some developers that are very big gamers.
Yeah.
Well, you know, Android is really caught up, where almost everything that's on the iOS side is on Android, either at the same time or very, very soon after.
Everything has come to Android that's on Apple, except for AppleCare, of course. So.
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, well. You know, the one thing I understand.
Thanks for the pity laugh. That was very nice of you.
I was going to say, the one thing I understand from NativeX about this in-app stuff in native advertising is that these gamers won't pay. You know, it's free. It's all about free gaming, and they're not going to spend money on anything. But by God, they'll do something. They'll do some action to get to the next level of the game. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And so the ads facilitate that. It's like, if you look at this, or if you go do that, or if you click on this, you get so many points, or you go to the next level in the game or something. They won't spend money, but by God, the ads work. You know what I mean? So that I definitely understand about, it's part of their, it's the core of their strategy on this native advertising movement of theirs.
Well, one thing that is different is that people on Android tend to not buy as many apps as people on iOS. So having that in-app advertising experience is one of the only ways to monetize on Android.
Yep. And they see that and they're going after it. So good for them.
Well, do you guys remember, and Tim, I think you were the guy that made the prediction that the first thing we'd see in 3D printing would be service bureaus. And
yeah, because the devices are too expensive.
They're too expensive. It's just
like service bureaus with laser printers back in the day.
Yeah. Well, so I just saw a press release about a Minneapolis company called 3D Printing Ally, a full-service 3D printing service bureau located in Minneapolis. And so they're really focusing on the industrial space so they can design drill jigs and masking templates and all kinds of other stuff for manufacturing and then 3D print them. And
so I can't get my Nexus 4 case printed there?
I don't think so. Plus, I wanted a new coffee cup 3D printed, but that's not going to happen. No.
Think big, Steve Borsch. Just think big.
I will. Actually, I want a holodeck, so I got to figure that out. But anyway. I
3D print that.
Yeah, yeah.
I love how their About Us link doesn't say anything about who they are, but it lists all their equipment.
Yeah, I know. Well,
it's
and
all
also
about
the
hardware, baby.
And also the text that they used. You know, the theme is great, and then the text that they use, I mean, like a 10-point font, you know. It's like, hey guys, you got to make it a little bit bigger, but yeah, it should be interesting to see what they've got because they do list out their gear and they've got Stratasys stuff and so yeah, I mean it's interesting that they're the first one in town. I haven't seen anybody else, so that's interesting.
In the way of a service bureau that's launched.
Yeah. Yeah. Right. And then I got an contact us from the forum post on Minovate from a guy named Matt Endress, and he's got a company called Shutter Buggy in Minneapolis, and they drive little smart cars around town and they fix customers' iPhones and iPads wherever they happen to be. And, you know, so they're sort of in a way, a geek squad for fixing mobile devices, and they're doing iOS stuff initially. And, you know, pretty good looking site and a nice little service. And so that's pretty interesting.
Yep. Yeah. Do they do stuff like cracked screens and stuff like that?
Oh,
I
yeah.
suppose.
Yeah.
Is that the main, so, that, yeah. is that the main business maybe?
Yeah.
Gotta be.
Yep.
Gotta be. Yeah.
Yeah. You know, There's a kiosk at the Mall of America where the guy is, you know, fixing cracked screens. And I just thought, is there really enough people around here with cracked screens to make that a business?
Apparently so. I've never cracked one, but tons of people do every day, you know.
One of their main tools in their toolbox is a ball peen hammer. So yeah, there's a plenty of cracked screens.
Yeah, yeah.
Let me see your phone. Oh, it's cracked.
Hey, let me get the screwdriver and prop. You know, pry that thing out of there.
So I have to say it is Shatter Buggy, not Shutter Buggy. Sorry about that. I'll put a link in the show notes. But yeah, I think there's enough stuff. I mean, I've got a buddy that cracked an iPad and it just fell on his desk of all places and put a little crack right in the corner of his screen. And it wasn't a big deal unless he ran his finger over the crack. And then he said, you know, geez, I know I'm going to cut myself on that.
Yeah.
And so.
You get blood all over your screen. Yeah.
It's like that Bill Hader commercial for T-Mobile with this cracked screen and all of his fingers bandaged up. I don't know if you've seen that one. But
Yeah.
That's hilarious.
That's hilarious.
Yeah. Yeah. So it's a good service because there's enough people out there. There's enough devices out there that.
Well, I can see the guy that's driving around town. You know, but the guy in the mall is the one that I've, you know, that's the one where, are there enough people in the mall to do it? I guess there is, you know, or the guy would not be there, right?
I would think.
It just seemed like a very specialized thing. Sort of like, remember back in the 70s, maybe it was the 80s, the original Saturday Night Live casted that that mall store All About Tape.
Yeah.
And,
right.
And there, and it was
the
like,
three,
it
the
was,
3M
all it was, yeah, it
Scotch
was masking
tape. Scotch tape. Scotch tape. Store. Yep. Yep.
And now that wouldn't be just like a crazy idea. But no. Back then it was like, oh, that's just hilarious.
That's it. Yeah. We sell tape. That's all they do is sell tape.
Well, I'm going to find a
same era. It was the same era as if it's not Scottish, it's crap.
Well, I have to find a link to this, but Letterman on his original NBC show did a bit where he went into a store called Just Shades, and it was just lampshades. And he's asking, you know, do you have bulbs? No, we have just shades. Well, do you have like mirrors? No, we have just shades. You know, and the whole store is shades, lampshades. And then he goes into this store called Just Bulbs. basically does the same thing. Do you have any shades? No, we're just bulbs. It's like, those, oh my God, talk about, of... yeah, but talk about niches. Oh my God.
Yeah, but David Letterman used to do so many funny bits in the early days.
Oh, I know. God. I know.
Oh, I'm sure they're all on YouTube. You know, the ones that were really funny were in the drive throughs at Taco Bell and stuff like that. Or when he manned the counter, and the microphone or the speaker. Oh God, that was funny.
That was so great. Well, hey, I don't know if you guys, I don't know if you guys know the Electronic Frontier Foundation well, but, you know, there's only one organization, and some people have said EFF is the ACLU of the digital world. And I think they're actually a lot more than that, because they're, it's really the only defense against clueless lawmakers who are, you know, try to ramrod stuff through and so on. And really even judges and anyone in law enforcement that, is pretty clueless about technology. And, they're a great counter force to what's going on. And I'm just going to play a quick 30 second.
And spot. This 300 slide presentation.
Yeah, yeah. And so let me do that, and I'll put some links in the show notes too.
The Electronic Frontier Foundation, or EFF, fights to protect your rights in the digital world. When a patent troll threatened podcasters, they fought back. EFF has also defended your right to encryption and has sued the NSA to end the government's mass, suspicionless surveillance. There are different ways you can help EFF, from donations, to signing petitions, to writing your representatives, to just spreading the word. Find out more at EFF.org. That's EFF.org.
And I have donated since, I think, 2002, every year. And then I found out my wife this year donated money as I did as well. It's like, oh, geez, okay.
Wow, doubling up.
Yeah, so, but it is, I mean, the work they do is unbelievably important. So I'm gonna also stick something in the sidebar that we really should support EFF.
Did they win that podcaster case?
You know, I think that's still going on.
It is going on, yeah. But they've been
That was such a stupid case. Right. Well, it's too bad that they have to burn their resources on that crap.
Well, yeah. I invented podcasting back in 1978.
I'm sorry. You did. In 76.
Oh. I did. And it was on TDK cassette tapes. And, I would send them out.
Well, I remember I had a tape recorder in 1968 where I recorded the moon landing. And so, but of course, that wasn't online.
I called it a tape cast. And, right. Really, remember that
it really was the precursor of the podcast.
Yeah, back it must have been because Peter Rojas was still at Engadget. It was, I don't know, 6 or 7 years ago. They did a April Fool's that was Engadget from 1980, you know, one or something, or maybe it was 84, and it was just like that. It was, everything was in ASCII, and they had tape casts, and it was just funny.
Oh, how funny.
I'll have to find the link to that.
Yeah.
Guys, I know we're running a little bit shorter on time here, but I did want to touch base, because Graham got himself a new little app that he emailed us about over the weekend, or over the last week. And so you got a little card trouble, a little diagnostic app there. No. Is that what you've got?
No car trouble, but the automatic labs little link, they call it, the automatic link that plugs into your car's OBD2 port, your data port, right, which is usually under your steering wheel. It's a slick little device that I think I got sucked into a Kickstarter on that, and I ended up getting it for like $69.95. I think it retails for $99, but thing is really slick. I mean, you download an app, and it communicates with your car and your phone using Bluetooth 4.0, and it's worth getting, if for no other reason, to just shut off that damn check engine light, which is a nuisance, and it's a scam for these garages, because they'll charge you, I don't know, 50, maybe 75 bucks to do some bogus, you know, diagnosis. And 90% of the time, they just shut it off and say, well, it doesn't mean anything. Don't worry about it. Or your gas cap was loose or something. So I don't know. I didn't have that problem on my car, but my son did on his Saab. And he hooked it up, worked great. He'd already found out there was nothing wrong with the engine. Shut the engine light. Like the check engine light off, and works like a charm, and you can use it on multiple cars. So check it out.
Well, automatic. It's only iPhone now, but it is coming to Android in December, it looks like. So
yep, and it works
on all
cars.
I'll be picking that up, because I've got a car with 300,000 miles on it, and if I stopped at the repair shop every time the check engine light came on,
you'd go broke.
It would break the bank. So
yeah, and it works on most cars since '96 that have that port. You know, so and you can check that before you buy it. Make sure it's going to work on your car, just on right on their site, which I think is automatic. I'll have to figure out what site it is. I think it's just automaticlabs.com.
Gotcha.
No, it's just automatic.com. That makes it easy.
Yeah.
Wow. They should have paid a lot for that.
So our pals at Google are up to stuff, and they just released the Nexus 5. Have anybody seen that? I mean, is it in anybody's hands yet?
Not yet.
Okay.
It's, you know, every time I read a review from the new Nexus, I always think, yeah, good. They're still comparing it to the HTC One. You know, it's not quite as good as the HTC One in build quality.
Yeah, but it's $350.
Like, yeah, that's true.
It's unsubsidized.
It is a deal.
Oh, seriously, unsubsidized.
It's unsubsidized, and it works on everything except Verizon, right? Is that right? Yeah.
Yep.
Every carrier except Verizon.
And is anybody running KitKat yet? Yeah, either of you?
I have
not yet, because it hasn't come out yet.
Oh, it's not. Okay. All right.
I had one last night for Halloween, but I don't.
Okay.
Yeah. Get it?
I will get KitKat first on my Nexus 4 and Nexus 7, but it probably won't come out for a couple of weeks.
Okay.
But I did see, Phil, you're going to get it on your HTC One, I think in December, I want to say, something like that.
Well, we'll see. You know, it'll be available for HTC One. Will it come via Sprint by then? No, probably not. So, because I just got upgraded to, what is J?
To Jelly Bean.
So,
okay.
Well,
but yeah, it always moves slower in Sprint world. But I may be rooting that phone soon anyway.
Ooh.
I know.
You have to use the Will Wheaton bootloader.
Got to use the Will Wheaton bootloader, just because I like to say Will Wheaton.
Yeah.
I don't want to dive off topic here real soon, but the one thing that I forgot to ask you guys about. Did you see the Bitcoin story about the guy that invested in Bitcoins in 2009?
$26 and
$26, and it's now worth $886,000. Yeah. It's like, holy crap.
And he forgot about it.
Yeah. God.
Just goes to show you, be an early adopter.
Why don't I ever do that?
Wow.
Wow. But yeah, I thought that was a pretty fun thing to notice this week. So what's coming up next week? Graham and Tim, you're off to MobCon, aren't you?
Well, I don't know about me, but Graham is.
Okay.
Well, I have seen...
hope that I am, but we'll see.
I think you are. Yeah, I thought you were.
Yeah.
I don't know. I haven't heard back, so who knows?
Well, yeah, I'm going to be there on Thursday and Friday right off of the conference in Denver called DFRAGCon, where I'll be with a few other Minnesota folks. So I've got a busy week next week. I'll be working from the road.
Working from the road.
So yep. What do you take, Graham, when you work from the road? Your MacBook or?
Yeah, well, I'm hoping to travel with two Airs in my briefcase to make it lighter. You know, my MacBook Air and my new iPad Air. So I'll be bit lighter. And then, of course, I'll take my new iPhone 5S and do some video or audio interviews with that. And I carry the briefcase, but it gets a little lighter, courtesy of Apple. You know, every time I acquire something new, it's a little bit lighter. So appreciate that, because the shoulder gets a little weary hauling that thing around, you know?
Yeah. Yep.
I don't do the backpack thing. I got to do the shoulder bag thing, you know? It's a generational deal, I guess. But anyway, I'm really looking forward to MobCon. I'll tell you, how can you not know about it? It's on electronic billboards around town. It's everywhere.
Yeah. I mean, the whole billboard thing struck me as, really? Do you really need a billboard?
A little over the top, yeah.
Yeah, well, it's a big,
More imaging than anything. I don't think anybody's going to necessarily be, hey, let's go to that event by seeing it on a billboard. But
you're going to do that for Mobile March, right?
No.
No billboards? Oh,
shucks. No billboards? Oh.
Sorry, dude. Sorry. I really apologize for that, but I just can't do it. Just not enough money in the old till. We don't make money on that event. So
I was gonna say, I don't know how this event can make money. I mean, if they broke even, I'd be shocked. But
yeah. What they charge, like $600.
They're offering 20% discounts all over the place.
Oh, yesterday it was 30%.
Oh, okay.
Well, I got an email for 30%. It was $100 off plus 30% for Halloween only. And I always, it was always a challenge for me whenever events like, this or, back when I was in the radio days, we would be promoting a concert. It's like, tickets weren't selling. So you would do a discount ticket. And I was like, well, wait a minute. What about the poor bastards that already committed early on? You know, you got to either give them a refund or just say, sorry, you bought too early. You should have waited for it to go on sale.
Yeah.
No.
Yeah.
But other than that, what else is happening? We've got City Camp coming up on the 9th at St. Thomas.
Yep.
And Ties Education Technology.
In December.
Is in December. Yep.
That's right.
So,
and then before then, between those two events, we eat large birds.
We do.
That's right.
We kill animals. Right. Actually, we don't kill them. We go in and they're all shrink wrapped.
We go over to Rainbow and we pick them up.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. Yeah, because we want to be disconnected from our predatory practices. Yeah, exactly. All right. Well, listen, thanks everyone for listening to
the Minute Big Gang podcast.
And we'll see you next week.
Yes, sirree.
Take care.